02, or go to give2wbai.org. Give what you can, because we will most certainly take it. I mean, money-wise, I'm talking about. No, anything else like that. Anyway, stay tuned for Off the Hook, coming up.
WBAI New York, time now for Off the Hook.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock time once again for Off the Hook. Program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Joined tonight by Kyle. Are you there?
Oh yeah, I'm here.
Okay. And we got the cue just right this week. It was perfect. It was really good because we had a phone connection, so there wasn't any hesitation or not knowing if we were on the air because we can't hear the station where we are. But we managed to figure out something else to screw up. And why are we not connected to anybody else? What's going on?
I got locked out of my Skype account.
You got locked out of Skype. How do you get locked out of Skype?
I guess I'm suspicious.
Well, I'll second that, but locked out of Skype? Can't you just make a new Skype? I mean...
Well, we could use one that... I think you're using that machine right now to read stories.
I'm sorry for using my machine, yes.
Yeah, it's going to be complicated, you know.
So we have some angry co-hosts who don't know what's going on.
They have no idea what's going on.
For some reason, we can't talk to them in any... Okay, you're doing something, though, right? You're working on something, some solution here?
Yeah, it's basically... I got these dialogues.
But you should also point out your phone is dead, too. Well, let's throw that in.
That's the other part of it, yeah. But I'm getting to that.
You're getting to that. I'm sorry.
Are you?
Forget I said that, folks.
Are you?
Go ahead.
I'm trying. Well, it's the situation where you get dialogues that are kind of pestering you.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it was being sort of apologetic, but insisting that, hey, you know... that's great that you entered in your information, but now we want to send you this code.
Oh, you got to get a code over SMS.
Well, I allegedly already got the code, but the problem is the device that I received that code, like, it's out there floating around.
The device?
Maybe?
The device is
no,
out
the
there
code.
Floating around? Oh,
no,
okay.
The code.
Right.
It's like, it's all over. It's everywhere.
Uh-huh. Yeah, of
but
course.
My device isn't on that network. You want to know why?
Why is your device not on the network?
I'll tell you why. Actually, you ruined it earlier, but I'll go ahead and get to that.
Because your battery's dead. Okay, I'll ruin it again.
Yeah, actually, you'll be surprised to know that my battery is actually very low. And in this particular model of handset or aged electronic technology, it requires like a baseline of charging before it wants to cooperate, and that means it can be plugged in but still refuse to boot up, which itself
wow.
takes ever so long. Not anything like the phones the kids of today use, So while I'm rubbing sticks together, trying to make
you think maybe
my
you should
phone
plug
light
it,
up.
You should plug it in then.
Oh, it's been plugged in.
Oh, good, good. Okay, that's foresight. You plugged it in.
No, I had foresight with the other aspects of producing remote broadcasts on WBAI New York.
We were going to talk about how the RNC is technologically what's the word, incompetent. But I don't think we're going to get to that because I think we're going to focus on ourselves.
Wait, that's news to me. There's a story there about their incompetence?
Well, no. There isn't a story that says that. But I think that we can share our own observations as to how they just don't get it.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well,
I don't know
if
we're going to get to that.
You want to avoid the overall irony.
If we can't even communicate with ourselves, I don't know if we're ever going to get to that. But
that would be thick with irony and kind of inappropriate.
All right, so
I'm okay with wherever you want to
go. So no doubt our co-hosts are listening to this right now over internet or even the radio if Robin Gila are in Queens and I'm hoping that your phone is taking a charge and that will allow us that will allow you to receive the code from Skype, which you inexplicably got locked out of. And why did that happen exactly?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I loaned my computer to a friend.
Okay.
And my friend was using that machine
Wait a minute. You're talking about me. I just realized I borrowed your machine. And, so this is the cause of it. Because, and I should tell people what.
Full
disclosure, I am finally getting around to digitizing this family collection of slides. So I've got all these carousels. You ever have slides? You know, slide projectors, all that kind of thing? I have a whole a stack of those. And, for some reason, the computer that I have wouldn't run the software properly. By the way, actually, I'm thinking of something else. I'm thinking of digitizing vinyl. We're doing two things at once, digitizing vinyl and digitizing slides. And I wanted to do both of them at the same time. And the vinyl software wasn't working on one computer at all for no reason. And we wound up just... Okay, never mind. It doesn't matter. It's not important. The thing is, I was using that computer. So what, I broke it?
No. It's just... I'm going to reserve the right to assign blame errantly, because that is my area of expertise. So no. In fact, the machine being out of my overall control, I guess, led to Skype getting suspicious. Maybe
how would Skype know that I had your machine? I wasn't using Skype.
You know what? That's right. But that's fine. I mean, maybe they noticed what you were doing while was going on.
That is just scaring me. That Skype. This is.
I'm totally making this up.
Yeah, I think you might.
I mean, do you know for sure that I'm not?
Okay. How's your damn phone? Is it charged enough to connect to something or to get a code, or is there a backup plan we can put together? Because I'm pretty sure. We can think of something.
You can focus on this embarrassment as much as you'd like, or I can quietly try to resolve it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have some stories to read.
Okay.
But I just ask that you quietly try to resolve it quickly.
Okay. My apologies for the inconvenience.
You can
all
reach Kyle with your messages berating. At our regular email address, oth@2600.com. We're the technology program where we live to talk about technology and how it works and sometimes doesn't, and how other people sometimes make total fools of themselves when they don't use it properly. So we have been keeping track of both conventions, and in fact, if you keep listening to WBAI, you will be hearing the Republican convention tonight starting at 10. And you could not tune into a better place to hear coverage of these people. Because it's just an unbelievable performance that is being unveiled in front of the entire world. We've gotten through half of it, Monday and Tuesday, and now we have Wednesday and Thursday still to come. And we're going to hopefully have some interesting news to share and speeches and things like that. I believe we'll be hearing from the Vice President tonight and some other brain dead people.
Heroes, yes. Yeah. His wife, too. Got to hear from the wife.
The Vice President's wife?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And, yeah, there's a lot to analyze and sift through.
So have you turned on your phone? Have your code yet?
I'll let you know.
Okay, but, you know, we're a quarter of the way through the show, almost.
Okay.
And
no pressure, right?
No pressure.
Okay, that's fantastic.
I'm getting messages on my phone, so...
Oh, no doubt you are.
Well, is there a way we can divert the code to a different phone if your phone isn't working?
I would love to troubleshoot this with you on the air, but I don't think that's the most effective use of our program.
Okay, well, Rob is suggesting that we set up a Zoom chat, so why don't we do that? I can hand you my phone with the details on it.
Sure, right. Yeah.
Here's my phone with the details on it, and... you guys get that set up, and we'll see how quickly we can get today's newfangled technology working, and we'll have a show before you know it. Wouldn't that be nice? Okay, so let's talk about coronavirus. Just get off topic. We were going to talk about RNC things, but I guess we can talk about the coronavirus since that's also in the news, and probably will be for quite some time. There are, of course, many people going back to school now, universities, elementary schools, high schools, things like that. And it's really kind of going to be a decisive period of time where we don't know what the effects of that will be. Now, in places like New York, which are fairly safe for now, it seems like a good idea to send kids back to school, but... if their behavior changes, and that's already happened in a few colleges where people are not acting responsibly, all of a sudden we could be looking at another outbreak if people don't follow the guidelines. And there seems to be an awful lot of that, no matter where you go, some places a lot more than others, guidelines are not being followed. Now, dealing with all this, there are all kinds of technological ways that colleges are handling this. Now, one Michigan college is tracking its students with what is known as a flawed app, Albion College. It's a small liberal arts school in Michigan. They said in June they would allow their nearly 1,500 students to return to campus starting in August. Lectures would be limited in size, and the semester would finish by Thanksgiving rather than December. The school said it would test both staff and students upon their arrival to campus and throughout the academic year. But less than 2 weeks before students began arriving on campus, the school announced it would require them to download and install a contact tracing app called Aura, which it says will help it tackle any coronavirus outbreak on campus. And we've seen similar things at other campuses as well, but this one really seems to stand out. Now, it's because of the catch that's attached to this app. It's designed to track students' real-time locations around the clock, and there's no way to opt out. Yeah, the Aura app lets the school know when a student tests positive for COVID-19. It also comes with a contact tracing feature that alerts students when they have come into close proximity with a person who tested positive for the virus. But the feature requires constant access to the student's real-time location, which the college says is necessary to track the spread of any exposure. It makes sense from a medical point of view. That is the way to track something. But from a privacy point of view, it's very, very disturbing, especially if people aren't told the facts. Now, the school's mandatory use of the app sparked privacy concerns and prompted parents to launch a petition to make using the app optional. And worse, the app had at least two security vulnerabilities only discovered after the app was rolled out. One of those vulnerabilities allowed access to the app's back-end servers. The other allowed us, meaning the reporters from the story that I'm reading, which is from TechCrunch, allowed these reporters to... I lost my place when I was looking at where it came from. Allowed access to the app's back-end servers. And allowed the reporters to infer a student's COVID-19 test results. So that's really, really disturbing. The vulnerabilities were fixed, but students were still expected to use the app or face suspension. Now, exactly how Aura came to be and how Albion became its first major customer is a mystery. Aura was developed by Nucleus Careers in the months after the pandemic began. Nucleus Careers is a Pennsylvania-based recruiting firm founded in 2020 with no apparent history or experience in building or developing healthcare apps besides a brief mention in a recent press release. The app was built in partnership with Genetworks, a Virginia-based lab providing coronavirus tests. Now, the app helps students locate and schedule COVID-19 testing on campus. Once a student is tested for COVID-19, the results are fed into the app. Now, if a test comes back negative, the app displays a QR code, which, when scanned, says the student is certified free of the virus. Now, if the student tests positive or has yet to be tested, the student's QR code will read denied. Aura uses the student's real-time location to determine if they have come into contact with another person with the virus. Most other contact tracing apps use nearby Bluetooth signals, which experts say is more privacy-friendly. Hundreds of academics have argued that collecting and storing location data is bad for privacy. Doesn't take much to come to that conclusion. Now, in addition to having to install the app, students were told they are not allowed to leave campus for the duration of the semester without permission over fears that contact with the wider community might bring the virus back to campus. So you see, this works for campuses, or it's designed for campuses where people don't leave. It would not work very well for campuses where people are coming and going. Now, if a student leaves campus without permission, the app will alert the school, and the student's ID card will be locked, and access to campus buildings will be revoked. That's according to an email to students that TechCrunch is reporting on. Students are not allowed to turn off their location and can be suspended and removed from campus if they violate the policy. Yeah, pretty scary stuff here. Private universities in the U.S. like Albion can largely set and enforce their own rules and have been likened to shadow criminal justice systems without any of the protections or powers of a criminal court, where students can face discipline and expulsion for almost any reason with little to no recourse. Now, last year, TechCrunch reported on a student at Tufts University who was expelled for alleged grade hacking despite exculpatory evidence in her favor. So pretty much anything goes. Albion said in an online Q&A that the only time a student's location data will be accessed is if they test positive or if they leave campus without following proper procedure. But the school has not said how it will ensure that student location data is not improperly accessed or who has access. Yeah, one student said, I think it's more creepy than anything and has caused me a lot of anxiety about going back. And, you know, that is the choice. In the end, you don't have to go back. In fact, this might be a great year to take off for many students, a good gap year. Just kind of hang out, maybe digitize some slides or something, and figure out something else to do instead of having to deal with all this anxiety. Now, one Albion student was not convinced the app was safe or private. I imagine quite a number of them were not convinced. The student, who went by her Twitter handle, which I can't possibly pronounce here, decompiles and analyzes apps on the side, and I just like knowing what apps are doing, she mentioned to TechCrunch. Buried in the app's source code, she found hard-coded secret keys for the app's back-end servers. Oh, yeah, way to go. That's using your college experience to the max. It was hosted on Amazon Web Services. She tweeted her findings with careful redactions to prevent misuse and reported the problems to Nucleus, but did not hear back. Now, a security researcher who asked to go by her handle Gilda was watching the tweets about Aura roll in. Gilda also dug into the app and found and tested the keys. The keys were practically full access, she reported to TechCrunch. She said the keys, since changed, gave her access to the app's databases and cloud storage, in which she found patient data, including COVID-19 test results with names, addresses, and dates of birth. Yeah, we got there eventually. It's all out there. It's amazing. Nucleus pushed out an updated version of the app on the same day with the keys removed, but did not acknowledge the vulnerability. Kyle, do you have an update on the... I see people on our screen.
Yeah.
I got buried in this story. It really is fascinating what people are facing when they go back to school.
Yeah, a lot of new software and stuff that works one way, or that it's taking all kinds of information. Really hasn't... We haven't even thought about it if, you know, that audit has been an afterthought at all. It's just ridiculous So hopefully our friends can join us and add to this conversation.
Let's see if that's possible. Well,
tell us
what you did so that people...
I didn't do anything.
Well,
it's
you
all
did something.
Alex. Alex saved the day. He made a Zoom link. I don't know. I don't really... I'm not really well-versed in doing Zoom quickly, but they set it up, so
okay.
It's there.
All right. Well, that's good. Alex, can you hear us? No, he can't hear us. Or he can hear us, but
muted,
we can't hear him. We're muted. Oh, that's great. How about now? Wow, this is really embarrassing. Okay, so we apparently can't figure out how to unmute ourselves. And we see Alex talking, but we can't hear him talking. Are we plugged into the right... Kyle, am I plugged into the right thing on the console here?
Yeah, it should be.
Well, look at what I'm doing. You got to pay attention. So, is this the right thing to have up?
No,
it's not. You see, that's why I was asking.
Try that one.
All right, I'm asking you, and you're not looking at me. You're saying yes, and this is why you always have to look at what people are pointing at. Okay, Alex, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Thanks for the pause, by the way. Gave me a heart attack. Yes. So we can all hear each other. How are you?
Wonderful. I'm well. I just came back from New York. I was there for the day, and in fact, I was racing home to make sure I back to Pennsylvania on time before 7 p.m. to get on the air. I guess I didn't have to do that.
You didn't have to do that, no.
Yeah, but look, we're all here, and you know, while we're on the subject of the RNC, we might as well just say, you know, we were always all here. We were never not on the air earlier today.
I don't know what that means exactly, but I've been through a traumatic experience.
We were always at war with East Asia.
Oh, I see. We're going to make a show and just pretend this didn't happen. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's kind of what we did last week because the first part of the show didn't air, and we simply replaced it in our archive. Because it was better than hearing the studio engineer trying to reach us and us not hearing him. Let me also introduce Rob and Gila. You're both here as well, correct?
We are indeed both here.
Yes, we are.
Wow. Okay.
And,
so this works.
We were actually going to just split off and have our own show with Alex, but since you guys have joined in, we can all just I guess combine our efforts.
Work together.
Yeah, maybe you guys should just host the show and have us on as guests. Maybe that's a better idea. Okay, so here we are. What do you think so far of what we've seen at the RNC? Let's start from a technological point of view. They're doing it differently, and they're criticizing the Democrats for the way they did it, which I think is rather similar to the way we did it at the Hope Conference, where we made it virtual. We had a lot of pre-recorded material, but the pre-recorded material was so much better because it just showed the diversity and the differences and where we were coming from, and we just seemed a lot more comfortable, and it was just variety. Variety was the theme, and I got that out of the DNC. It just seemed to be always going to something else. What they have at the RNC, they have people talking into empty auditoriums, and I don't know how that's better. And basically having the same background for a lot of people. I don't know. What have you guys noticed?
I think my favorite moment of all of it was during the roll call when I don't remember what state the representative was from, but who announced that the state was committing their 82 votes to Donald John President.
Yeah, I saw that.
But also the difference between the roll call at the DNC versus the roll call at the RNC, I think, really does speak to the kind of production stuff, whereas, you know, it was a kind of a tour at the DNC, and the RNC is already standing in front of the same step and repeat.
And they also forgot Wyoming was a state.
Nice.
Well, we apologize to our Wyoming listeners, and we would never forget you in such a way.
Never, never.
But, the whole thing just seems to, and I know I have my own personal biases when I say this, but compared to the DNC, and especially compared to what we did at Hope, like, there just seems to be no soul behind what they're doing. It's kind of by the numbers, and they're talking to empty rooms, which feels sort of, indicative of what they're doing on grander scales than just what they're saying. And it just seems like there's not much there.
No, no. And also, you had that thing last night in the Rose Garden with Melania Trump, where all these people were not observing social distancing. They weren't wearing masks. What was the point in that? I don't get it. Just putting everybody at risk for no good reason.
That's, I think, a running theme during the past 4 years or so, maybe longer.
Mac? Yeah, I mean, I saw the same thing last night watching that, and I felt like she went on for quite a long time as well, and wasn't saying anything particularly impressive, you know, to my mind, quite frankly, but they were all sitting pretty close together. You know, granted, though, they were all outside, so that's, you know, one mitigating factor. But you would think that they would want to set some kind of positive example. You know, they are being rather revisionist with their facts and their history.
When would you think that, Alex? I mean, they've been doing nothing but screaming at us and trying to instill fear. What makes you think safety is high on their list?
Yeah, well, I know. I mean, the whole thing really is frightening in so many respects, too, though, because it does feel, when you watch this, to me, positively Orwellian. You know, and that's why I mentioned the we've always been at war with East Asia quote, because so many of the things that are coming out just have so little disregard for the truth. And there's
plenty of disregard for the truth. Not, you mean no regard for the truth, but there's plenty of disregard for the truth.
Yeah.
It's very Orwellian.
It really is Orwellian. I mean, do you remember, God, it was almost 4 years ago when I wrote my first opinion piece for CNN, which was about Trump in 1984 and decoding Trump's first actions during his first 100 days through the eyes of Orwell's novel 1984. You know, and when you look at this is really, really frightening, because they are being very revisionist about lives that were saved by their efforts at the outset of the coronavirus pandemic. You know, even being revisionist about things almost 4 years ago, like the crowd size and the inauguration. When you look at the montages and the pictures that they put together, this feels like something that is straight out of 1984.
It really does. And you know, you hear reports the platform that was released by the Republican convention, basically, it's not really a platform; it's just a one-page summary. But one of the things that they are saying is that they are pledging devotion to Trump or loyalty to Trump.
Yeah, instead of a platform, it's a pledge. It's a pledge. And I do agree that it was like hyperbolic hyperbole, like layered on top, like compounded, weird rhetoric around, you know, envisioning something in your mind instead of reality. I think, I don't know if that was Trump Jr. Some of the other speakers that were coming across that, like, thick, just mind warp okay, reality might not be what you like, but let's all have this collective consciousness around some truth or untruth that we're going to believe in our minds.
Well, speaking of untruth, there was one speaker, I forget who it was particularly, but she was criticizing Joe Biden and the fact that his family members benefited from his position. And I happened to be looking at CNN at the time, and at the bottom of CNN it said, coming up later are talks from Tiffany Trump, Eric Trump, Melania Trump. The only names on there were Trump's. It was, I mean, I don't know if that was intentionally done, but it was brilliant if it was. Nowhere has there been nepotism to the degree that we are seeing now, and yet they have the gall to criticize others. And I realize that's kind of a theme, is that they commit a heinous offense of one sort or another, and then they accuse their opponents of doing that instead. And they grab the narrative so that their followers basically keep saying that their opponents are guilty of this, such as not being environmentalist or being racist or ridiculous things like that, and that allows them to sail free.
Yeah, they go direct. They want to be first to being aggrieved. The grievance is they want to be that first before anyone on the left or anybody could say anything about tone or how something was done. They want to be first and right there, mm-hmm. already a victim, already compounding in some meta, really warped meta reality that they're pledging to agree.
You know, one thing I've noticed, the way you can tell good people from bad people, and by good people, I'm making it a very wide net as far as good people, and bad people fairly narrow. Bad people are always angry. They're always shouting. They're always instilling fear. Look at Hitler, okay? Hitler was, you never saw him giving a pleasant speech, right? You never saw him smiling and saying, well done, guys, because he was winning, you know? He was basically conquering left and right. And Trump and his people, they are in power. They have been running this place for the last 4 years, and they have been angry the whole time. Whereas the Democrats are really kind of friendly and open, and you know, one thing I saw the other Trump, Donald Trump Jr., he basically said that the Republican Party is open to everybody, and literally the next sentence, he said, and the first thing we have to do is get rid of the radicals, basically starting a list of people that have to be purged. And so you could not get more Stalinist, Orwellian, you pick it. This is nightmarish to see, not so much what they're doing, but to see how many people are simply falling in line and believing it and not ever questioning.
Yeah, allowing that to be spewed from some party that purports to represent them. And I feel like there's this thing of, like, I've fallen out of trust with any kind of bipartisanship in so far as this particular convention is concerned, because they're casting this broad characterization of Democrats as radical, and they want their base to believe that no matter what.
Now, can you imagine?
No matter what.
I mean, BAI listeners, we know radical, okay? And there are many, many degrees of left. But to call Joe Biden radical, to call him Marxist, to call him anarchist, I mean, can you imagine if he actually was any of those things? What they would be, I think no matter what, they are just going to try and use those words to scare people.
It's hilarious on its face, and then to think that to cast or disregard them as being a substantive entity out of hand as a result of that opinion, and mm-hmm. it is an opinion. It's not based in fact. And so then they can cast that entire party as you know, irrelevant or invalid because of that opinion in their heads, their collective hallucination, whatever that is, that makes them somehow right in forces the binary or the non-choice that they must go with this pledge of loyalty. And I mean, I will say that the Republicans are morally bereft. I'll say that they're corrupt, but I'm not casting aside the entirety of the party. That's probably counter to a lot of what more radical individuals might say. They might say the entire, you know, the party system, all that. I get it. But, like, to completely nullify a party in our two-party system, it's not fair. That's not an even vote. You're setting it up for people to not believe or not even validate people if they get a mandate.
Right. Rob, go ahead.
The thing that strikes me most about this is I've watched a lot of RNCs, I've watched a lot of DNCs. Obviously, it's different this year. But one thing that's always been common is it's basically an internal event. Like, people are talking to their own side with it. Nobody's trying to convert the other side. I don't think anyone is undecided in watching the RNC or the DNC to make their decisions. I think it's just basically preaching to the choir, sometimes quite literally. But the thing is that it's always seemed to me to be in the past, and even 8 years ago at the peak of Obama mania, or 12 years ago rather, it's always been about, like, this is what we're going to do, this is what our side is going to do, and it always seemed like more of a collective celebration. And this, more than any other one of these that I've seen, is about one person and loyalty to him and following him. And I think there's something terrifying about that.
Yeah. Speaking of which, this was particularly interesting to me to watch on Monday evening. Because I'm sitting there, I'm on the couch. I've got the RNC blasting. And, there's Trump talking with, some recently freed hostages and, making the world think that he was solely responsible for this. And there wasn't a cadre of career State Department employees that had been working on these matters for several years. And, he's such an attention-seeking, credit-grabbing fraudster. But I'm sitting there on my couch, and I thought to myself, this is actually pretty cool because I can say for once in my life while watching the RNC, hey, guess what? I sued that guy today. We filed a lawsuit against Donald Trump on behalf of TikTok employees on Monday. At around 4 o'clock Eastern time on Monday was when we actually named Donald J. Trump as president of the United States as a defendant in a lawsuit contesting the constitutionality of his executive order banning TikTok, because it would essentially make paying TikTok employees illegal on September 20th. So that was pretty cool for me to be able to actually sit there and watch the RNC and know full well that I just named that guy as a defendant in a lawsuit.
Well, I look forward to seeing in a courtroom in years ahead the people of the United States versus Donald Trump. I want to see that in some court papers. I'm sure we will see that many, many times.
Well, we hope so. And, if he's not a sitting president, he doesn't have that kind of immunity. But, to bounce back to what you and Rob and Kyle were saying, too, which is, the other really scary part of this that is in large part Orwellian in and of itself is the misattribution of positions to others. And
right.
In particular, of course, Joe Biden. And he is continually, not just he being Trump, but the Republicans across the board have been saying that Biden has supported the defund the police campaigns. And he has just never done that. I mean, it's just never underestimate the idiocy of the left sometimes, too, in coming up with a slogan for the reallocation of certain portions of police budget to, have a slogan that can be capitalized and exploited by the right.
But Alex, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what slogan they came up with, because the Trump people would have distorted it. No matter, it could be praise the sun or something like that, and they'd make evil out
perhaps,
of that.
But this one is particularly bad. I mean, it's just too easy for them, not to exploit the defund the police, because nobody's really talking about defunding the police and disbanding them entirely. It's about the reallocation of the budget. But I think and this is something I've said in print too. But again, what's Orwellian about this is that we have to struggle these days for things like basic honesty. And what Orwell warned us about in 1984 is that, uncorrected lies will, quote, pass into history and become truth. That's what's scary to me, is that if you just barrage the people with all of these lies, it becomes the job of the media and becomes the job of the people to call out these falsehoods and to correct them. And if you're shoveling you-know-what against the tide, some of these lies are going to pass into history and become what we would consider 50 years from now truth. That's terrifying.
What did you all think of the framing of it just by using the White House and Pompeo, of course, speaking for a party, essentially partisan event?
Oh, Kyle, he was there as a private citizen. He was speaking on his own. He had nothing to do with Trump.
Right, right. But also,
that's the party line.
But just the visual of having the White House used. I know there were a lot of explanations and sort of excused it because of the circumstances and all of that. But using all of these D.C. institutions, really kind of loving the swamp, but their version of it, and in so doing, really pitting it visually as, we're this institution because we're surrounding our, they're sort of like just draping themselves in the flag, and of course the the White House itself being used as a prop. I mean, what was the takeaway? I mean,
for people who don't see the harm in that, the threat in doing something like that, what's the big deal with Trump standing in front of the White House? He's the president. Well, because he is speaking as a candidate. And by standing in front of the White House, you're basically saying, if you're not for me, you're not for that.
Yeah.
You're not for the White House. You're not for the country. And you are an enemy of the state. It's not in so many words, but that's the thought that lands.
Yeah, and there's also things like members of the armed services were there, in full regalia when they're not supposed to be acting on a political basis either. And there's a bit of legislation called the Hatch Act, which has been getting a lot of chatter lately because that is the act from the 1930s that prohibits federal employees from using their titles or official status in political activities like this. I don't know if anyone there can really be said by any reasonable definition to not have been acting under under their office.
But then what would happen is my question. If it's been shown that nothing, no law that gets broken, that gets violated in any way, if there's no repercussion for that, then what would be the difference now? And I'm not even going to start on where Mike Pompeo spoke from, because that's a whole different can of worms, but mm-hmm. I have lots of feelings.
Yes, Alex,
and I've been jumping up and down, Rob, about the Hatch Act. I think you got it exactly right. You know, the Hatch Act applies to all federal employees. And when I was working, in defense and intelligence, the Hatch Act applied to me in particular, and I remember actually, doing research about the limits of the Hatch Act, can somebody have a bumper sticker on their car for, let's say John Kerry and park in a federal parking lot? Does that violate the Hatch Act? Because having political regalia at your desk or proselytizing while you're on the job, certainly would. And so, all these things are taken really, really seriously and apply rigorously to federal employees. But when it comes to the Trumps, it just seems like they get away, as Gillen noted, without any enforcement, without any kind of, even slap on the wrist, violating these really sacred principles about separating politics from the operation of government.
Yeah, this is what concerns me because, as you say, Alex, he gets away with it constantly. And that becomes the norm. Like we were saying earlier, when you repeat a lie enough times, it becomes the truth. And if Trump gets away with this, not having his tax returns displayed, which is traditional, not honoring the Hatch Act, all these other things that he gets away with, well, then it just becomes one less thing that that we believe in. And, it's frightening because we're seeing so much unrest right now. We're seeing people in the streets basically demanding justice after yet another African-American is shot by police for no reason. And basically the dialogue, what we're hearing, not only from Trump but from the mass media, it's about the violence in the streets. But it's not the violence in the streets of shooting innocent people. It's not the violence in the streets of a Trump supporter yesterday coming and executing two people in the streets. No, the violence in the streets, it's about burning cars. It's about basically people shouting and taking over streets. That is what we seem to be more concerned with. And, yeah, Trump is leading the charge, but the mass media also is picking that up and is not questioning, saying, no, that's not the problem. Look, when we see demonstrations in Lebanon after the city blows up because of government corruption, when we see an election stolen in Belarus, when we see people marching for democracy in Hong Kong, we don't focus on the vandalism. We don't focus on the broken windows. We focus on the issues. Why don't we do that in our own country? Why aren't we talking about what's happening in Wisconsin and saying this is about justice? This is about nothing more than not shooting innocent people, and the police are culpable here. Instead, it's, these horrible demonstrators, and maybe they're from out of town, and they're causing all kinds of problems and interfering with shopping. we need to focus on the actual issues. And this goes beyond Trump. This is something that affects the mass media, affects our the way so many of us perceive what's actually happening out there.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
I think you've hit it right on the head there, too. And I think the critical word that you mentioned there, mm-hmm. Emmanuel, is focus. Why can't we focus on this? Well, we've got an attention deficit problem as a nation these days. And I think it's only going to get worse. And in large part, I think, you know, what's responsible for this is social media platforms, things like Twitter, things like Facebook and Instagram, where we have instant gratification with these tiny little blurbs. You know, we even have an acronym for, you know, TLDR, right? Too long, didn't read, for articles that, you know, are usually, you know, some kind of expose or deep dive into something. We all want sound bites. We all want to be amused and entertained, and we think politics is there for our amusement these days. And these issues, we can't even focus on them for more than 30, 45 seconds without getting bored. That's a big problem for us as a nation now. I think we want to do that, but the news cycle doesn't permit it. Social media platforms operate in large measure, I think, on outrage. And, you know, people are outraged by this, and that certainly fuels it for a while. But then there's more outrage on top of outrage, right. Sort of like irony upon irony when it comes to the broken windows and, you know, and the violence and the – and frankly, you know, a lot of times like what happened last night in Wisconsin, people have crossed the line. I mean, people died in these things. And so if people are dying in these demonstrations, it's going to eclipse the issues that we can't even focus on for more than a minute anyhow. So I think we have an attention deficit problem as a nation, and we're only going to escape this vicious cycle by escaping from the clutches of these social media platforms.
But again, Alex, it's the way it's phrased. People are dying in these demonstrations. So they're not dying in the demonstrations. They're being executed in the demonstrations by Trump supporters. That is what happened. There's a picture of this guy in the front row of a Trump. Now he is gone with his long gun and actually shot people after hanging out with cops right before that. There is a serious problem here. That is what needs to be front and center. All I'm seeing on TV right now is the fact that the NBA canceled some games tonight. You know, that's not the most important part of all this. We have to watch the RNC tonight or listen on WBAI in 2 hours if they even address that at all, or if they simply continue talking about the demonstrators as if they're the problems. The demonstrators are the solution. Thank God you have demonstrators. Thank God you have people that care about justice. If you don't have that, then you just have the executioners and the cops that are assassinating people in the streets. Rob, go ahead.
Okay. Sorry, I'll just jump in. I wasn't sure who was going to go. But, I mean, the demonstrators are engaging in constitutionally protected activity. I mean, that's the irony here, right? I mean, these are people that love America, love the Constitution. You know, they love the Second Amendment. But, you know, the Second Amendment wasn't, you know, considered to be as important as the First Amendment, our right to peaceably assemble.
It also has been distorted ridiculously.
A lot of stuff, if I may just jump in, a lot of stuff that's been damaged, too, is symbolic of the system itself, the justice system. I know some of the buildings around this courthouse that people were gravitating towards. And I just wanted to point out that those would be built 10 times over to substantiate that system. And they're being damaged because it represents the injustice, and it needs to be torn down.
Yeah, sometimes you
don't
need those
tear things. We ought not shed one tear for some holding cell or some place where more people be mistreated and their rights violated or just sucked into a system that doesn't care.
Yeah.
And that, I think, needs to be said. They would build it 10 times over every day of the week. There's funding coming out the ears for this kind of institution. And the argument is the institution itself is corrupt and wrong.
Go ahead, Rob.
So what you were saying, Alex, about the place of social media and all this, we really need to examine, because I don't think the media environment is going to get any healthier unless we start really questioning our dependence on this sort of thing and the people in control of it. I'll give you an example. I have a YouTube account, not my personal one, but a separate one that I started just for a project I'm working on that posts videos. And so that's not an account that ever watches videos. So it's got no, like, profile built up of, like, what it prefers to watch, one thing versus another. And still, the default ads when I sign in with that account all for Trump stuff, all for, like, right-wing conspiracy stuff, all for stuff that stokes the fires because YouTube, as one example, Google, as the owner of YouTube, has made the decision that it's going to seek profit by stoking these fires, by fueling outrage, and by giving people, you know, simple videos on why this side is the best versus the other one. And, you know, I did nothing to instigate that. I didn't watch any right-wing stuff on it. I didn't watch any left-wing stuff on it. But that's the default, well, and that's where we stand.
You know what's interesting, Rob, is that I look at Google News, and I don't sign into Google when I do it. And invariably, I get Fox News and I get the New York Post more than anything else. So I think you're right about that. I think they are pushing that. Guys, we're out of time. I don't know how this happened, but we have run out of time. I just want to invite people to keep listening to WBAI. In about 2 hours, we are going to start our coverage of the Republican National Convention. And I want to invite listeners to write to us, oth@2600.com, with your opinions, your thoughts, your observations on our show. And, Kyle, go ahead.
And I was just going to add that it may be a result of people in your area. That's the kind of stuff they're consuming, so it's serving you stuff of like-minded individuals in your geographic location.
Right. So continuing, we'll be back again next week, and please keep listening to WBAI. I'd like to go out with someone who is near and dear to WBAI, and that, of course, is George Carlin, and his thoughts on politicians and how it might apply today. Good night.
It seems that linguistically, politicians hit their truest stride when they find themselves in trouble. At times like these, the explanations typically begin with a single word, miscommunication. How do you answer these felony charges, Senator? The whole thing was a miscommunication. But what about the tapes? They took them out of context. They twisted my words. Nice touch. A person who routinely spends his time bending and torturing the English language, telling us that someone has twisted his words. But as the problem gets worse and his troubles increase, he's forced to take his explanation in a new direction. He now tells us that the whole thing has been blown out of proportion. And by the way, have you ever noticed with these blown out of proportion people that it's always the whole thing? Apparently no one has ever claimed that only a small part of something has been blown out of proportion. But as time passes and the evidence continues to accumulate, our hero suddenly changes direction and begins using public relations jujitsu. He says, "We're trying to get to the bottom of this." We, suddenly, is on the side of the law. "We're trying to get to the bottom of this so we can get the facts out to the American people." Nice. The American people. Always try to throw them in. It makes it sound as if you actually care. As the stakes continue to rise, our hero now makes a subtle shift and says, "I'm willing to trust in the fairness of the American people." Clearly, he's trying to tell us something, that there may just be a little fire causing all the smoke. But notice, he's still at the "I have nothing to hide" stage. But then, slowly, "I'm willing to trust in the fairness of the American people" progresses to "there is no credible evidence." And before long, we're hearing the very telling, "No one has proven a thing." Now, if things are on track in this drama, and the standard linguistic path of the guilty is being followed faithfully, "No one has proven a thing" will precede the stage when our hero begins to employ that particularly annoying technique, "Ask yourself questions and then answer them." Did I show poor judgment? Yes. Was there inappropriate behavior? Yes. Do I wish this never happened? Of course. But did I break the law? That's not the issue. The calendar is marching, however, and it soon becomes clear that our friend is most likely quite guilty indeed. We know this because now he shifts into that sublime use of the passive voice. Mistakes were made. The beauty of mistakes were made is that it doesn't really identify who made them. You're invited to think what you wish. Bad advice? Poor staff work? Voodoo curse. But it's too late. Mistakes were made quickly becomes "eventually I will be exonerated," which then morphs into "I have faith in the American judicial system." And the progression ends with that plaintive cry, "Whatever happened to innocent until proven guilty? Whatever happened to innocent until proven guilty?" Well, he's about to find out. Eventually, in full retreat, and federal custody. He shuffles off in his attractive orange jumpsuit and can be heard muttering that most modern of mea culpas, "I just want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life." And to emphasize how sincere he is, he announces, "I'm taking responsibility for my actions." How novel. Imagine taking responsibility. He says it as though it were a recently developed technique. Whenever I hear that sort of thing on the news, I always want to ask one of these "I'm taking responsibility for my actions" people whether or not they'd be willing to take responsibility for my actions. You know, gambling debts, paternity suits, outstanding warrants. Can you help me out here, pal? Regarding this whole "put this thing behind me" idea in general, here's what I'd like to do. I want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life thing behind me and get on with my life. May I repeat that for you? I want to put this thing behind me and get on with my life thing behind me and get on with my life. I think one of the problems in this country is that too many people are screwing things up, committing crimes, and then getting on with their lives. What is really needed for public officials who shame themselves is ritual suicide, harakiri, like those Japanese business executives who mismanage corporations into bankruptcy, never mind the lawyers and the public relations and the press conferences. Get that big knife out of the kitchen drawer and do the right thing.
Hi, this is Mitch Jezerich, inviting you to join us on this radio station for Pacifica's live coverage of the Republican National Convention, starting Monday, August 24th, and going through Thursday, August 27th, starting each night at 7 p.m. on the West Coast and 10 p.m. on the East. We'll have the main speeches, we'll talk to progressives, and yes, we'll talk to conservatives too, and we'll be taking your calls. So join us for Pacifica Radio's coverage of the Republican National Convention.